beans, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films I Feel Pretty, Super Troopers 2, and Traffic. Plus, a look back at the 1987 film The Monster Squad. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Mystery Science Theater 3000 Season 11. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It's actually been a sad week. There has been a lot of celebrity deaths, especially ones that are kind of dear to me. The first one I want to talk about is Art Bell. Now, he's not a movie guy. He's not a TV guy, although he had a couple appearances and he was in the X-Files in one episode, and he's shown up in other things. But he passed away on Friday the 13th, no less. You know, if you had to have Stephen Hawkins die on Pi Day, you had Art Bell die on Friday the 13th, April 13th. He died at age 72, yet to be determined the exact cause of death. A lot of speculation is that it was related to COPD because he was a smoker and he had been dealing with chronic lung issues because of smoking. And so at age 72, he passed away at his home in Pahrump. Of course, by now, you know, it's been a week since this has happened. It's been talked about quite a bit on the radio. But as a guy who works in radio and as a guy who's done radio, the aggressive and monumental do-it-yourself personality that Art Bell had is the thing that's going to stick with me more than anything else. I mean, yes, his talk about conspiracy theories and is always going to be notable, but the real thing that makes a difference for me when it comes to Art Bell isn't even the subject matter. It's what he did. And somebody who got a ham radio license when he was like 13, and he's always lived in this world of fascination with radio. He was sort of like your normal guy as a DJ or a person who was doing talk back in the 80s. And it wasn't until the 90s that he kind of just made his own thing. And when you actually looked at his show, I mean, he got a market, the overnight market, which wasn't like, it really was kind of like this wasteland back before Art Bell came around. And the midnight to 5 a.m. slot usually didn't get a whole lot of listeners, but they sort of zeroed in on something with the conspiracy theories, aliens and everything. And that seemed to be a great fit for the insomniac who listens to the radio or all night truckers kind of thing. But the fact that he broadcast a show out of his home in Pahrump, Nevada, and ran everything, I mean, the advertising, everything went through him. And this was at a time where, yeah, you had people like Rush Limbaugh, who back in the late 80s and into the early 90s sort of forged his own path. And, you know, whether you agree with him or not politically, you have to respect how Rush Limbaugh changed the face of radio. And in a lot of ways, Art Bell changed the face of radio, or the ability to do radio, showing that if you get an audience and you zero in on something, you can actually kind of write your own ticket. And he had a real do-it-yourself nature to this. And he also wrote his own ticket. And that's kind of amazing how he did that and capitalized on that time slot. And now we're at a time where conspiracy theories are going overboard and kind of going crazy. And there's a lot of contention and there's a lot of negative emotion out there. And one of the things that Art Bell did is he was still sort of that old homespun guy who'd sit on your porch. He wasn't angry and he wasn't trying to tear things down. He was just there to listen. And yeah, he had some real whack jobs on his show, but he was able to have them on and they could have a, they could actually have a discussion about it, which was admirable in my light. So I think Art Bell is going to be missed. And even though he's been off the radio for a while and he, you know, of course dealt with all of his retiring back and forth and it ultimately was dangerous for him and his family, him doing this radio show, it still is an indelible mark and defined the 90s just as much as something like The X-Files did. So Art Bell will be missed. There were also a couple other deaths. You had Milos Forman, who also died on Friday the 13th. He is, of course, the famous director for doing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Hair and Amadeus and Man on the Moon and The People versus Larry Flint. He was 86. And then we got hit again, Arlie Ermey, on the 15th. He died age 74 of pneumonia. Most people recognize him from the opening sequence of Full Metal Jacket. And he always played the army sergeant. He was in Toy Story. And anytime you needed the drill sergeant to yell at people, Arlie Ermey fit that role. I interviewed him once years ago. I mean, this is like 15 years ago. And he was such a pleasant man. So he's going to be missed as well. And then finally, Harry Anderson of Night Court fame died on the 16th. Age 65, cardiac arrest. He had retreated from his fame to just go back to North Carolina and open up a magic shop, I think. I mean, this, and again, here's somebody who had an indelible mark on pop culture back in the 80s and into the 90s with Night Court. So all of these people are going to be missed. It's been a tough week for somebody like me who's seen a lot of these. It's just all this happened in like 3 days. So it was tough. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Deadpool 2, opens on May 18th.
Hit it! There's this kid. He's in trouble.
Move or die.
Pump the hate brakes, Thanos.
I ain't letting Cable get to him. But I can't do this alone.
We need backup.
We're going to form a super duper group.
It's time to get back on LinkedIn.
You're no hero. You're just a clown. Dressed up as a toy.
So dark. You sure you're not from the DC Universe?
And last but not least,
Peter.
Any power you want to tell us about?
I don't have one. I just saw the ad.
You're in.
This still looks funny. I'm hearing rumors that Deadpool 2 might have some problems, and you knew that was going in when they switched the budget up and they switched the people involved in it. But I think that it still has a lot of potential to be a good movie and exciting and fun. And I'm looking forward to it. As long as it keeps the spirit of the original and doesn't try to change the formula in terms of the comedy and the tongue-in-cheek nature of Deadpool, which is what Ryan Reynolds brought to the project, I think it's going to be fine. I'm looking forward to a big summer release and just in a month. The next one I want to talk about is The Equalizer 2, which opens on August 3rd.
Robert, I'm your only friend. It's great you're helping all these random people and everything. But stay off the radar. Something happened to one of ours, so I'm obligated to look into it.
Thought you were retired.
Oh, I am. Just like you're dead.
They're tying up loose ends.
Exactly.
He's your partner for 7 years, Mac. It's a mistake to go to war with him.
It's go time. They're going to war with me. It's go time. Whoever did this have off chart skill sets.
Call 911. Go time.
I really enjoyed the first one. I think Denzel Washington fit the bill perfectly. And also, the thing that's interesting about this movie is Denzel Washington's character was kind of he was more helping the average person in the original movie. And he used a special skill set to go after really bad people doing things to, you know, basically everyday folks. This one looks like it's going to be a little bit too big in some ways. I still have faith in the director, Antoine Fuqua. I think he's a wonderful director. I still think Denzel Washington is a formidable opponent. I am looking forward to this one. So we will see happen. It's the same frame that it did when the first one came out, like August, September release. I'm still looking forward to this one. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about I Feel Pretty and what I think about Amy Schumer.
So sexy.
see it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about one of the big releases this week, and that is I Feel Pretty. A woman with low self-esteem is hit in the head and suddenly believes that she is the most beautiful and capable woman in the world, and doors suddenly open up for her.
I've always wondered what it feels like to be just undeniably pretty.
Are you okay?
You hit your head pretty hard.
Wait, that's me. Oh my God, you see this?
Yes.
I'm beautiful!
Things have really changed for me.
You just have all the confidence in the world.
I think a lot of people completely miss the thing that really makes them awesome. And you're not like that.
There is one way to answer whether or not you're going to like a movie that features and sort of is a vehicle for Amy Schumer. And that is to say, is Amy Schumer your spirit animal? If you say yes, then you're going to love it. If you get her comedy and you love Trainwreck, and you love Snatched, and you love anything she's attached to, then, yeah, you're probably going to like this movie. Because it's got a lot of Amy Schumer in it. It is not just a vehicle, but it is so aggressively focused on Amy Schumer and no one but Amy Schumer that it's tiresome. So if she's not your spirit animal, or if you're just somebody who's mildly annoyed with her by this point, then you're probably not going to like this movie. That's going to be the tipping point. And I think that group of people who call Amy Schumer their spirit animal is shrinking by the day. She came on very strong with her Comedy Central series after her stand-up, and then she did the movie Trainwreck. And Judd Apatow is good for launching some people's careers, but sometimes he's not that good at sort of giving them a launching point. I mean, he did this, and actually, if you look at the women who've been involved in Judd Apatow's movies, their popularity isn't necessarily great, and they continue to get roles kind of in spite of themselves. Look at what happened with Katherine Heigl after Knocked Up. She kind of torpedoed her own career, but that was her arguably her biggest movie. Look at what happened with his own wife, Leslie Mann. Yeah, she still gets movies like Blockers, but I think the only reason she's working still in the industry is because she's married to Judd Apatow. If she were married to Joe Smith, some plumber from Brooklyn, everything else being equal, she wouldn't get work. And this is the way it is with Amy Schumer, I think, as well. Not that Judd Apatow has anything to do with this movie, but he helped launch her movie career with Trainwreck. I'm going to talk in a little bit about my issues with Amy Schumer and why I don't like her. And no, it's not because she's overweight. My God, I have a show called Fat Guys at the Movies. I ate a bowl of Trix this morning with no milk on it. I am in no place to call people fat in a derogatory way. In terms of the movie I Feel Pretty, there are some sweet moments to it. There are some bits that actually are quite funny. There are some jokes that work and land and are appropriate. There are some gags that work. There are some very tender moments in parts where the story does kind of get kind of sweet. I mean, it's this female-oriented sort of I'm reticent to call it a rom-com because the romance is very secondary to just sort of being a light comedy. And, I mean, it works in a lot of ways. At times, it does really work. And it threatens to pull me in, and it entices me. It's like, oh, look, isn't this kind of sweet? And then I'm suddenly reminded that Amy Schumer's in the movie because Amy Schumer's in the movie. There's an underlying unlikability to Amy Schumer. And I saw this in droves with Trainwreck, where I remember saying, I don't like the character. The character's not a good person. The character's self-absorbed and doesn't really get out of it in the movie Trainwreck. And in this one, she is so fixated on image. The character is so fixated on image that's the only thing. And then when she turns into somebody who believes she's the most beautiful woman on the planet, she kind of just becomes an a-hole. And like overnight, I mean, it's not something that where she's like, oh, I'm getting all this good things happening. They're trying to show her sort of like, oh, she's sort of being taken in by the glamours. But no, from the moment she suddenly thinks she's pretty, she's like, oh, you know, it's tough for beautiful people. And she starts talking down to everybody. She becomes what she abhors in the movie. And I don't think she ever really takes a turn away from that, even when her character is supposed to grow by the end. And there's also this weird underlying message of the movie that, no, you can be who you want to be, but still buy cosmetics to cover up all your garbage in your face. Because that's, she works at a cosmetic company. And the whole thing is she's supposed to not look like a gorgeous model. Very Ugly Betty. If you remember that TV show from several years ago, where America Ferrera played a frumpy, chubby girl working at a fashion magazine. It's very Ugly Betty. It's very much trying to say, just be yourself, but also fashion's important and you should still put on makeup because you don't want your ugly face out there in the real world. I mean, that's kind of the message that Ugly Betty had. And that's certainly the message that this movie has. There's a whole subplot where they're trying to launch this everyday cosmetic line for average women. And sort of like, we'll say, well, what is the message? Is the message just be yourself and be okay with it? Or it's like, oh yeah, but still, you still need makeup. No, seriously, you still need makeup. So it's a mixed message movie, and I don't think it quite hits the mark. And then she's just obnoxious in it. She goes overboard. She's not a good actor. But let me, first of all, I'm going to rate this. I Feel Pretty kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
But I also want to zero in on my issues with Amy Schumer as an actor or a comedian. Her entire shtick relies on her being overly promiscuous and aggressively overly promiscuous, even though you don't get that in this movie, but that certainly was in Trainwreck and in her stand-up. But also, she's like preemptively defensive about things. And she's like, oh, what, you're going to call me fat? And here's the thing, she's not really fat. I mean, she's not skinny. I don't think anyone's going to say she's thin. But it's funny, I saw the next day after I saw I Feel Pretty, I was at... I was on the OSU campus because there's a theater there that had a screening. As I'm walking back to my car, this girl's walking the other way, and she was probably college age, I'm assuming. And she had curves. She was wearing the workout tights, and it looked like she was either heading to or coming from the gym. And she was not model thin by any means, but she still looked great. And I would say that she probably has about the same, if you measured it, body mass index as Amy Schumer. She still looked fantastic. And I don't look like this woman was suffering at all from the oppression of the fashion industry's image choice. So you got to make a choice. Are you fat or are you not? Or are you just going to kind of be, say, oh, well, I'm the average body type, but don't call me fat. That's just weirdly defensive, and that's the ultimate element of her comedy. Her entire shtick relies on that. Once you remove that, she's not a compelling actor or screen presence. I mean, take somebody like Melissa McCarthy, who is overweight, and she's been big, and she got famous when she was big, and she got famous playing obnoxious big woman in Bridesmaids. And then she did a couple of those other movies that kind of fit that same bill. But when you diversify her and she starts taking other acting roles, she's actually quite good. I mean, Melissa McCarthy is a talented, beautiful woman who controls her destiny, and she's a joy to watch on screen. I wouldn't say the same for Amy Schumer. Amy Schumer, once you take away her pre-defensive nature, she's uninspiring. If you look at the movie Thank You for Your Service, she played a widow in that, and she was just boring. And that's ultimately what Amy Schumer is. She's kind of a one-trick wonder. Anyways, that's all I have to say about that. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Traffic and Super Troopers 2.
Stop it now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews, or at least for this one, a movie preview, because once again, there's more movies that the studios don't screen widely. Not a big surprise, because these movies tend to not draw much positive reviews anyways. The movie that hits the Russian roulette of not being screened this week is Traffic, with a K, no C. A couple on vacation are terrorized by a motorcycle gang in a remote location.
Hey, baby, your phone is ringing.
That's not my phone. Hey, that girl.
I think I put my phone in your bag by accident.
Just give me the phone, okay?
You will kill
was something that belongs to me.
I have to say that even though this wasn't screened, it actually looks like it might be kind of interesting. It stars Omar Epps and Paula Patton as the married couple, and I guess they're at this location, this remote house with friends, and there's a motorcycle gang where this girl tried to get their attention on the way there and stashed her phone in their bag. I don't know. I'm just getting it from the trailer. It actually looks like your standard thriller home invasion movie. Paula Patton, though, isn't a very good actress. I mean, she just isn't. She's beautiful, absolutely. And here's the thing. I mean, for as much as I railed on Amy Schumer in the last segment, I don't think anybody would, at least body image wise, say the same things about Amy Schumer as they would Paula Patton. But that's not going to make me think Paula Patton is all that entertaining to watch. She is not a good actor. She is actually quite terrible. Pretty much in every movie I've seen Paula Patton in, even like Mission Impossible, her void of acting ability is a real problem. And she takes me out of the movie. Probably the best acting performance she ever did was in Warcraft, where she was basically playing a mocap orc monster or whatever that she was. So this looks like it might be a good throwaway thriller. And it's made by Code Black Entertainment, which tends to make movies for the black audience. It takes what would be a regular movie in it, and it puts the black characters as those who are being attacked by the motorcycle gang in there. And that kind of gives it that urban thriller look to it. But ultimately, it's just your average home invasion thriller without it being a horror movie, being just more of a thriller. So in a weird way, I'd like to see this movie, but it wasn't screened. So like everything else, gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Super Troopers 2. The Broken Lizard team is back with the wacky state troopers from Vermont who must oversee a town in Canada that is becoming part of the United States.
1, 2, 3, let's do it.
It turns out the French-Canadian town St. Georges du Laurent is actually on American soil. You'll be phasing out a Canadian Mountie unit.
Best behavior, boys.
You guys ride horses, or?
Yeah, this is in 1957. We drive Crown Victorias.
Let's give a big Canadian welcome to the Vermont Highway Patrol.
Come on, guys. They've come up here to tell us how great it's going to be for all of us to become Americans.
The whole path to this movie is, in a lot of ways, more interesting than the film itself. The first Super Troopers, I never saw in the theaters. A lot of people didn't. It kind of came and went in 2001, 2002. And it then reached cult status on video, on VHS back in the day, actually, before it even went to DVD or Blu-ray. And it's one of those weird little cult movies that has a massive following. And I ended up watching it on home video, and I thought it was funny. I mean, it has some funny moments. It's clever, but I never saw it as outrageous and awesome. And then the subsequent Broken Lizard movies that they did, stuff like Beer Fest and Club Dread, I found far more funny and far more interesting and much better put together. But those never reached any sort of level of cult status the way Super Troopers did. And Super Troopers seems to be sort of like the good old boy, frat boy, who also celebrates the 20th of April, 420, in a certain way. That's the target market. And it's not a pot movie. That's the thing. It's not like Dude, Where's My Car, where they're clearly on drugs through the whole movie, or Up in Smoke, going all the way back to Cheech and Chong days. But it does, let's just say that this has a certain appeal to people who engage in marijuana use. So and then when I went and saw the movie, I was surprised that it didn't smell like a hippie hut in the theater, even though it was actually pretty crowded. But there is a cult following of a very testosterone-laden people who are drawn to a sophomoric type of humor. So if you like the first one, you're probably going to like this one. Because they were talking about a sequel for years. They were going to originally do a prequel, and then they ended up finally funding it through Indiegogo and get like $4.5 million for it, which is a fantastic number for a single movie. And they were able to make the film. And it wasn't the first crowdfunded film, because like Veronica Mars, it was one of them. Zach Braff did that awful Wish You Were There. Yeah, I think Veronica Mars was really the first crowdfunding feature film that hit the big time. And of course, Super Troopers got all the people who loved the original movie that got them on board. You know, ultimately, it has some laughs. It's funny. It's outrageous. But it's not like overly outrageous. It's weird because these movies don't seem to, they don't feel like cult films to me when I watch them. I mean, you watch something like Rocky Horror Picture Show, you're like, oh yeah, totally a cult film. I can totally see where that became a huge cult film. The Room. I can totally see where there's a cult following to The Room. I fail to see the brilliance of Super Troopers. It's mildly funny. The first one. And this one's mildly funny. There's some stuff that's pretty clever and funny. And then weirdly harkens to the days of the David Spade, Chris Farley movies. It has a certain Tommy Boy or what was the election one that they were in. And it does kind of feel it partly because it has Rob Lowe in it. So they do have some people that are pretty good in the movie. I mean, Linda Carter's in it. She looks great. Emmanuel Shrieky's in it. And she's gorgeous. She's in her 40s. She's like 42. And she looks fantastic. So I'm a big Emmanuel Shrieky fan. But overall, I mean, it's a funny movie. It does what it needs to do. It makes you laugh. It does have certain jokes that do seem recycled. A lot of the humor relies on the Canadian American butting of heads. You have jokes about the term sorry. You know how Canadians say sorry instead of sorry? They have a big joke about that. They have a lot of jokes about the Canadian accent. They also have a lot of jokes about, just some political jokes that are thrown in there. I mean, it's not an overtly political movie. But yeah, they make jokes. Canadians, it was funny. I was in Canada last year and those jokes are made. Let's just put it that way. Those jokes are made, good and bad about Americans. And then of course Americans make jokes about Canadians too, but you gotta have a good humor about it either way. I will say this. I went and saw it in a Thursday night, the opening show, the very first one, and it was pretty full. The theater was. And I think I was the only one there who wasn't like a diehard Super Troopers fan because everyone was like really into the movie. Stay through the credits. If you see this movie, stay through the credits. And when I say stay through the credits, I'm talking about Marvel stay through the credits. Don't just wait for the mid-credit sequence. Don't just wait for the bloopers over the credits. Stay all the way past the music rights and the company logos because there's something at the very, very end. For the entire fan base that was in this theater, I was the only one who stayed to the very end, and I'm the only one who got to see sort of this little payoff to a joke they made. So overall, it's a fun movie. Like I said, it reminds me of Tommy Boy in a lot of ways, or Black Sheep. The Black Sheep, I think, was the one about the election. Super Troopers is fine. I've warmed up to it a little bit more, but just don't believe the hype. Don't get wrapped up in the hype. If you want to just see something stupid, this is your movie. And for that respect, I'm actually going to say that Super Troopers, God help me, Super Troopers 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Monster Squad, the box office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Mystery Science Theater 3000 Season 11. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up with the final movie review. Recently, I've been doing a little bit of looking back at movies that I like that are kind of pulling out of the vault, sometimes from 30 years ago. And that's this one. It's The Monster Squad. A group of friends band together to stop Count Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, the Wolfman, the Mummy, and the Gill Man from taking over the world.
You know who to call when you have ghosts. But who do you call when you have monsters?
We're the Monster Squad.
They're young and inexperienced.
Naughty virgin!
They're a bit disorganized.
Monsters are not real.
We don't know that, sir.
2,000-year-old dead guys do not get up and walk away by themselves!
Take him in the door! Take him down!
directed by Fred Decker, who directed Night of the Creeps, another of my sort of favorite cult films from the 80s. This is one that I never saw actually in the 80s. I was a little bit too old for it. I was about 16 when this came out. And this relied on sort of the Goonies age. I always tell people I was just a little bit too old for the Goonies. I was 14 when the Goonies came out, or I'm going to turn 14. And the Goonies were for like 9 and 10 year olds. But whenever they do kids books or kids movies, the target market is always a couple years younger than the main characters of the movie. Cause kids always look up to their characters. They tend to. And of course, all these people saw it on HBO in the late 80s and early 90s. And that's why you have a generation kind of behind me that is rabidly excited about the Goonies. The Monster Squad is essentially the Goonies meet the Universal Monsters, only they couldn't use the Universal Monster rights because this was TriStar and Universal owned them, which is why they can do Frankenstein and Dracula because those are books, but they can't make them look too much like the characters in the movies. And that's why the bolts are on Frankenstein's head and not his neck. And that's why the Gill Man's called the Gill Man and not the Creature from the Black Lagoon. So recently I've been going over to my dad's, you know, my dad's in advanced age and I take my son with me who's 9 and I bring him over and we watch movies with him. And it's a lot of fun because I can talk about bridging generations between a guy who's like 80 and a kid who's 9. And it's a challenge sometimes to get movies. Like we watch Lucy. And my dad, I think, thought it was a little bit too graphic for my son, but my son loved it and my dad liked it as well. But I also showed him Monster Squad because my dad is a huge fan of the Universal Monsters. And he originally was like, he didn't want to watch it. He thought it was going to be like a cartoon. And I'm like, no, Dad, it's like the Goonies meet the Universal Monsters, but he was never a Goonies fan. But you know, he watched it and he enjoyed the heck out of the movie. He enjoyed it. And the thing that's great about this movie is, it hits that level of kids with cult movies. You know, you couldn't make the Monster Squad now. You could, but it'd be very different because it relies on loving these movies that are old and considered somewhat outside of the mainstream. And back in 1987, it was the stuff you caught on the late show. I mean, yeah, you may have had VHS at the time, but even then VHS wasn't as pervasive as like DVDs and Blu-rays and streaming is now. So there's a lot of stuff that you just caught on TV or you caught at like afternoon picture shows when they brought in vintage films to watch. And you don't get that same exposure now that you did back then. And this is a fun little movie and it's rather grown up for how much it is aimed at, like I said, 10-year-olds. And I've got, I had to put in the trailer, you know, the Wolfman's Got Nards scene. That's probably the most famous one. And my son had seen this movie before. And as that scene gets started, he's like, oh, you hear him make this noise. Oh, here it comes. And my dad didn't quite know what to make of that. But I'll tell you, Monster Squad, even though for a 30-year-old movie, it's a lot of fun. And it's worth checking out. And I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's just hit the box office really quick. Last weekend, Rampage ended up winning $36 million, which is good enough. I mean, it's going to make more money overseas. It's certainly going to make back its budget when you take the international box office. It's not a massive hit. It's not like Black Panther or anything like that. But it certainly is going to make its money back. $36 million, it kind of was lowballed initially. They thought it was going to come in under A Quiet Place, but then it started to get back up. But The Quiet Place did quite well in its sophomore effort. It only dropped about a third of its box office to about $33 million, which is fantastic. It hit $100 million technically over the weekend. The numbers came in and pushed it over $100 million for the final weekend. Truth or Dare did a bit of an overperformance, just under $19 million, which is a shame because that's a terrible movie. And then Beirut was way outside of the top 10 at number 13 with under $2 million. Sergeant Stubby came in with a depressing $162,000. It made on average $98 per screen. No one was expecting that one to do very well at all. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is on Mystery Science Theater 3000 Season 11. After almost 20 years in suspended animation, the cult TV show returns featuring a new host and robots riffing on bad movies.
Oh, hey, we've got one!
Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is
Moon Base 13. We need your help.
Mayday!
Show prop initiated.
What the heck?
You speak to I, Kinga Forrester, commander of the Moon 13 Research Station. I am reopening my family's most legendary experiment, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Movie in the hole!
I already did a review of this back when, about a year ago, when it dropped on Netflix for the first season. And I got a chance to preview a couple of the movies. So I only got a chance to see like the first two or three movies. And now it's available. It's still available on Netflix. You can still watch it on Netflix. It's been available all year, but now it's hitting Blu-ray. It's a nice little box set and it's a great way to have it because, as you know, Netflix, you never know. They may pull the rights. They may lose the rights to these movies. They may drop it off the service at some point unexpectedly for whatever reason. And especially for this series, Mystery Science Theater, because they're using other movies, is fraught with rights issues all the time. That's part of the reason why it's so hard to find some of these old Mystery Science Theater movies. So I would say if you like Mystery Science Theater, and even if you like this season 11, it's worth checking out and getting the Blu-ray, then you will always have these videos and they can't take it away from you at that point. The other thing that's interesting about this box set is it comes with a documentary on a final disc about bringing back the show. And that I found actually quite fascinating. As much as I like the movies, I found this one very interesting because they go through the process of how Joel Hodgson's wanted to bring it back. And then they worked with Kickstarter and then kind of had it roll even faster to like $6 million is what they raised. And then they could do like 14 movies. It became such a success. And then they talk about the casting and they go through a lot of the development of the movies and the production. The thing that is a little sad in watching it, it did make me a little bit nostalgic for the original show, because the original show was this hometown puppet show, basically shot in a homemade studio up in Minnesota. And it always had that small town feel. Even when it moved to the Sci-Fi Channel and there's a lot more meddling with the executives there, it still was just a Minnesota puppet show. And there's something of that that is lost. But they do make a point in the documentary to talk about this show by saying, and I think it was Jonah Ray, who's the new host, he said, if the show had stayed on the air for 20 years, this is what it would be like. Because it is shot in LA, and it uses a lot of LA comedians, and it's a bigger budget, and it has a higher production value. And it has this self-referential cult status as opposed to this self-deprecating belief that it's just this crummy little cable show that's hanging on by a thread. There was a charm in that that's lost, but it's still funny. And I think these new movies are great. And the fact that they have a bigger budget and a more production value, they can put some good stuff on there. And the movies themselves are quite fun. And the ones I hadn't seen last time I talked to you, of course, got Star Crash, which is a fantastic 80s ripoff of Star Wars. But they also have The Land That Time Forgot, the 1-2 punch of The Land That Time Forgot and At the Earth's Core, these Kevin Connor directed movies starring Doug McClure, who nobody knows who that is now. But these are cheesy movies from the 70s. The ones that are a little bit softer for me, I wasn't a huge fan of The Loves of Hercules. I've never been a fan of the Hercules movies. But there's one that's just a gem. The Carnival Magic is a terrible movie from the 70s about a terrible talking chimp in a carnival. And that is wildly hilarious. And of course, the Christmas episode, The Christmas That Almost Wasn't. But overall, if you're at all anywhere near a fan of Mystery Science Theater, you should get this season 11. So I'm going to have to say that this Blu-ray package totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And that is it. I need to go for the week. Next week when I come back, I'm going to be talking about a little independent film called Avengers: Infinity War. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.